Mary, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure, Kate. Thank you for having me.
I am looking at a National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey put out by the CDC in 2010. And it says more than one in three women, or 35.6%, and more than one in four men, or 28.5%, in the U.S. have experienced rape, physical violence, and or stalking by an intimate partner in their lifetime. That's pretty overwhelming.
Those numbers are overwhelming, almost so much that we let them kind of glaze us over and we don't grasp the full magnitude of what those numbers are telling us about the society in which we live.
I heard you make a passionate presentation about Merriman House recently, and you described really a world of hurt going on around us in Western Kentucky that we're not aware of. And I kind of sense that it has to get a very rough world of hurt before the Merriman House is summoned through crisis intervention. Is that about right?
That is right. I like to talk to folks about the Merriman House kind of having two arms. We have this one side of us that reaches out to the community through outreach programming in hopes of supporting survivors of domestic violence and helping them make decisions about whether to leave an abusive relationship, or even maybe a step before that, helping them to even see what an abusive relationship is. But then we have this other arm that is many times, by the nature of the work that we do, shielded from the general public, and that is our emergency shelter arm, our crisis intervention arm. And when folks get to the place where they need to have emergency shelter to save their lives or the lives of their children, we are then seeing them sometimes at a time that the general public would make their stomach turn. Sometimes when they come to our doors, they are in need of everything from medical care, psychological care, toiletries, clothing, food. So from the most basic need to maybe the more complex need, because they are fleeing an intimate partner situation that now has threatened to take their lives or the lives of their children. So yes, I would say that there is a world of hurt that oftentimes is out of the view of the general public here in Western Kentucky.
But once those problems go out of view, they suddenly emerge into another world that is in view, and that's the world of the courts, which is another area where Merriman House helps.
That's exactly right. So it would be our hope, right, that when women and children come to us, that we are going to be able to connect them with whatever resource or venue that best supports and meets their need. And so in terms of legal advocacy is what we call it. It's a fancy way to say that we stand beside them to help them figure out what path they want to take, if they want to take that path within the court system. And so what the research tells us, Kate, is that emergency protective orders, while it's just a piece of paper, is effective. It is effective in stopping that violence for a period of time and creating that space between both individuals that we can then begin to do some repair work and some healing on the side of the survivor, and puts them in a position to be able to then think more clearly through what other steps or additional steps they may like to take. So we do have that part of what we do, and that is when we meet them in the court setting, we are usually there on their behalf to help them sort through the emergency protective order process and advocating for them in that way, in hopes that that will be the first step in them finding peace and safety in their home.
How many and what sorts of professionals in total does the Merriman House have at hand to address needs of people who've suffered domestic violence?
The Merriman House agency employs only 15 individuals, and those individuals provide the services for the 8-county purchase area, and we have them divided into various skill sets. So we do have crisis counselors, intake workers, court advocates, housing counselors, which is a totally different area where we're learning more and more what barriers get in the way or obstacles get in the way of our victims. And so we do have an economic support department that we call it, that where we help women and men, when appropriate, to connect to housing resources. We can stabilize their housing situation and help them regain security financially. So we have 15 plus some volunteers, and we have some interns as well that work with us.
And how many emergency shelters do you operate, and how long can people stay in them to be safe?
We only operate one emergency shelter that is located in the Paducah-McCracken County area, but we provide services to the eight counties that surround. So folks can come to us from the 8-county purchase region or even sometimes outside of that region. The emergency shelter is located in Paducah, and the average stay is about 45 days. We do have what we call a phase program where we work with clients to work through our program, and hopefully they will complete that within 3 months. So the average stay is 45. Some stay much shorter than that, and some stay much longer than that, especially if they have limited English proficiency or some have some immigration issues that we're helping them resolve. So it varies, but that's the average stay.
We're talking about the worst scenario cases. How does the Merriman House help people who sense that that worst scenario is on its way? I suppose that falls in your outreach. What kinds of topics come up of concern for people who fear they're going down the road of the ultimate problem?
Well, I think it's simple. We have a simple problem in that we can say that everyone has the right to live in a violence-free home, right? That sounds really simple and really straightforward. But when we start to help victims sort through what that means, we find a much more complicated issue. And so sometimes what comes up is, I talked to the victim last week who fled to the emergency shelter, and her intimate partner had just put a gun in her mouth and said, "I will kill you. It's just a matter of time." And so for her, that brought her to emergency shelter in a state of crisis, as you might imagine. And then as we talked through what had just happened, what I began to see unfold was all of the logistical concerns that will come up. What will happen to my extended family? What will happen to my children? Where will we live? How will I pay the bills? How will I enroll them in a different school, and they're already rooted? And so then all of those much more family systems, if you will, those complicated issues start to come up. So if I were going to say what I often hear, what our advocates often hear is, where I am right now in this violent relationship, whether that is the what we call the first initial phases of maybe it's emotional abuse or isolation or it has turned physical, all the way to the scenario of the young woman that sat across from me, where had had her life threatened just hours before. Anywhere in between that scope, we hear, but if I do this, then what about this and this and this and this and this? And so that really begins the complicated work of trying to figure out how to help women and children live lives that are safe and healthy.
Do you keep up with people who have come to you, who have figured out the path? Do you keep up with them on that path?
We do, so long as they invite us to be a part of that long-term journey. We sure do, and sometimes that is really where I guess the motivation to continue in the trenches every day, because what we hear is, what we know from the literature, we know that a woman or a man may leave a domestic violence relationship up to 9 times before they ever break free. So just right there, we have a built-in sort of recontact with victims. But once they break free and once they go through that journey of healing, gosh, we will get emails or phone calls. We just got one the other day. We help them have savings accounts, and we help them make sure they're secure financially and that they have those other things that they need, housing and support. And she had found a permanent, stable and safe home in a community that she was well supported. She had just started a new job, and actually that job was that she opened up her own small business with a portion of the money that she'd saved while with us at the Merriman House. And she had completed her business plan, and her business was going well, and her children were enrolled in school, and her life was, in her words, happy and healthy and hopeful. And so we are privileged to be able to stay in contact with them when they allow us to do that, and it is a real joy.
Mary, perhaps the saddest part of all of this are the kids, and I wonder if kids ever get over being a part of a situation like this, and what the Merriman House does for children.
Well, I would like to say that I think that they get over it. I've learned that I think maybe a more accurate description is that they grow through it, and kids are very resilient. And so what I guess would say to a listener who may be struggling through this decision is kids will be okay, and they will be resilient when they're given the tools and the support to do that. And so sometimes individuals might buy into, well, at least they're home, at least mom and dad are in the same home, and at least, you know, they have other good aspects of their life. And what I often say to victims is living in a home with domestic violence is not a healthy home. And so the best thing is to get them out of that environment and then let us and the community that is around you help you rebuild a home that is healthy and safe for them. So do they get over it? I think they grow through it. I think they develop skills that they need to be strong and active contributors to our society. And I think that we work to create within the emergency shelter an environment that is like home. And we begin to show them what real love looks like, what healthy relationships look like, and what it means to be at peace when they lay their head down at night.
Hmm. Well, I suppose we ought to conclude with giving the number for the confidential crisis line that is staffed toll-free 24 hours.
There is a toll-free number. What I would like to give you today, though, is just our general number that will get everyone if they were to need something. And that number is 270-443-6001. And that number, again, is 443-6001. And in our day and age, sometimes folks like to check us out on the website, and they can go to merrimanhouse.org, and it's got all the information there. We just encourage anyone that does that to make sure they're in a safe location to do that, and make sure they're taking proper precautions to clear their history if they're learning more about domestic violence on their computer.
By my calculation, Merriman House has been helping people in our region for 35 years, and
yes.
I bet you have lots of benefactors to thank. Your funding comes where? Comes from what sources?
Our funding comes from various sources. So, yes, you are exactly right. We would not be able to operate without our community donors, just individuals in the community that hear our message of saving, building, and changing lives and say we want to be a part. From our local United Way, of course, is a supporter of the Merriman House. And then we also have several state and local grants. So the Cabinet for Health and Family Services, the Office of Violence Against Women, victim assistance programs, those federal and state funders are critical to our work. But I will tell you, not nearly as critical as our local community and our local United Way.
Mary Foley, thanks so much for being with us today on Sounds Good.
Thank you.